Item 7, consider and take possible action regarding non-service connected disability retirement allowance for deceased member Say Yuan Farm. Tim, this is you.
Okay. On July 13, 2018, Mr. Farn, a 60-year-old experience level clerk with EHSD and an active CESERA member, died as a result of heart disease. Prior to his death, Mr. Farn had on file the member election form for a non-service connected disability in the event of death during active membership with us. Mr. Farn had approximately almost 32 years of service with the county. The medical records were analyzed by the board's medical advisor, who concluded that the evidence supported that Mr. Farn was totally disabled prior to his death and employment was not available to them. Therefore, in his opinion, he met the medical requirements of a permanent disability for a Tier 3 member. Following the receipt of the medical advisor's report, we did receive a report from the Pierce County Sheriff's Department that provided more details on bystanders, witnesses, and paramedics trying to resuscitate Mr. Farn, where he had his medical emergency. They were unsuccessful, and at that point, they pronounced him deceased. The board is now called to make a determination as to whether the member became permanently unable to perform his job duties, and if the member election for non-service connected disability in the event of death during active membership should be granted. The recommendation is find that the member was permanently unable to engage in any substantial gainful employment and grant a non-service connected disability effective the date of his death, July 13, 2018, and grant the member's beneficiaries benefits pursuant to Government Code Section 31764, an optional settlement for allowance.
Candace, then Scott.
Yeah, so the report, in essence, he fell or someone discovered him in cardiac arrest or unconscious and someone started rendering CPR. Was he with someone? Was he by himself? This is almost identical to the other situation we had. I still have a really, really hard time saying that when someone immediately dies, they were disabled. And so he wasn't hospitalized. It's just challenging for me because it goes to this whole issue of course, when you're dead, you're disabled. You're not able to work. To me, it's very, very different than if somebody is hospitalized, has an illness, or that we even have the same standard we rely upon when an individual applies for disability. So I'm very, very challenged with this one.
Scott.
I don't know that I have a lot more to add after that, because I have the same concerns. I also am interested in the additional information, only because I didn't, and I may have missed it, I didn't see it reflected in the packet, because I was struck by Dr. Blink's opinion on the second page, where he says, although there is no record of the event itself, I'm going to speculate and say X, Y, and Z. And I appreciate what he did and tried to fit within the framework of what the decision is that we need to make. But, you know, I thought that was a pretty telling observation or statement that there was no record of the event. And it turns out there was apparently some record of the event. But to Candace's point, even with that record of the event, it's challenging in the sense that it sort of runs against the grain of what we would think of as a disability in the normal context. We just had a disability hearing in closed session, and so this is something very different. And it strikes me as almost a continuous heart attack fall event deceased. So it's a fiction to call that person disabled. And with all respect, and if there are any family members here or anybody associated with this, I apologize.
And I too.
I'm just trying to get to the quick of it. It's a real stretch. I'm having trouble with it. And we do this just infrequently enough, like once a year, that we kind of revisit the same issue every time we bring this up. And I don't know that there's a resolution to it, but I have the same concerns that Trustee Anderson does. So I'm disinclined.
Mike.
I just had a question, Tim. Was this person actively employed at the time of their death?
Yeah, they were on vacation.
I see that he was in Gig Harbor, Washington, but it says his residence was in Marysville.
He actually had a Bay Area residence, as well as he purchased, I'm going to give you, this is my understanding, he purchased a home for retirement in Marysville,
okay.
But he actually lived in the immediate area.
Okay, that was just a little confusing for me, of his status.
Yeah.
That's a long
way. We did receive, a statement coming from his son, one of his sons, and that, going back to what was just stated, his father was on vacation in the Pacific Northwest visiting friends. They went clamming that day on the hike back, and it was on the Cut Island, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
On the hike back, his friends noticed that he had low energy, not wanting to hold up the group. He encouraged them to go ahead. At some point, one of the friends looked back and saw him collapse. They tried to revive him. They got someone else's attention who tried to perform CPR. Now this is coming a statement from the family, and then we also have the information from the sheriff's office. And again, there aren't anything, more specific besides CPR was attempted and was unsuccessful.
Rusty?
Yeah, what stood out to me in Dr. Blink's report is what appears to be a standard that we judge these decisions by, and he says even if the terminal event was sudden, brain death would not begin until 5 minutes later. So, are we to assume that anytime there's a sudden death, technically, you still have 5 minutes of brain life left, so therefore, in that standard, they would be disabled. That's the way I took it from the report. I'm not sure if you took it the same way. But in that case, then, it seemed like in every instance where we have a heart attack, we'd always rule in favor of granting this, because there's that idea that there's still even 5 more minutes after the heart ceases from working. Reaction to
John and Candace.
My recollection on the last one, that as Candace indicated, was very similar to this one. And maybe Karen, Tim, you recall better, but we all agreed that we needed to clarify this. This is really a death benefit. Is that what we want? Is that required by statute? Going through this kind of a process puts everybody on a plane 3 levels above my pay grade anyway, whether or not they met some kind of a test that said they lived for 30 seconds or 5 minutes or what have you. And it just was a poorly defined benefit. Typically on a retirement benefit, I just tell you this from a lifetime of being in this business, the primary purpose of a retirement benefit, whether it's disability or any other, is to benefit the individual who becomes disabled and needs that additional help during his or her remaining disabled lifetime. This is completely contrary to any of that. And so let me ask if we've gone any further in trying to be more specific on how to deal with these going forward.
I think I can take this one. We did look into the duration issue in terms of in cases where there is competent medical evidence showing that there was indeed a disability prior to death. What does that mean? What does prior to death mean? How do you measure that time? And there is no guide to that except for the fact that we think it needs to be a discernible amount of time, such as minutes, but there is no clarification in the statute or in case law about that exact duration.
Were we to accept and approve Dr. Blink's recommendation here, would we be also setting a precedence that, based on his recommendation, that there's 5 minutes of brake life left, even after the heart stops, that we'd have to go by that opinion from here on? Would we now be establishing some guideline here that would
say? I would say that in every case, you have to look at that case and the facts of that case and determine whether there's competent medical evidence showing that there was indeed a disability prior to death.
Mike, did you have something?
Yeah.
I was being so patient.
You weren't being patient, and I apologize. I'm sorry, Mike. Candace was next.
I was next.
I'm trying.
And I'm trying not to interrupt. I thought I'm going to play with the, do it the
right way. No, you're absolutely right. You were next.
Okay, and I agree 100% with John, because, and this goes back to what I said last time we looked at this, I cannot think of an instance where someone dies where we will not, if we follow this path, grant this disability. And I've got to agree with John. A disability benefit is to benefit the living member, and we have pretty high standards before we grant a disability retirement. And so, to me, anytime it appears that death is relatively instant, where you don't have someone hospitalized, where you don't have somebody alive for some significant measure of time, which to me is more than, brain dead, I have a really hard time with us justifying this. And I would much prefer to see a standard. I agree with Karen. We've got to look at each one on the circumstances. But when someone appears to instantly die or be found dead, I cannot find them disabled. And that's my concern. And because you cannot give me a scenario if we go down this path where we won't grant anyone who dies this disability benefit. Because when we start talking about brain death versus, being alive for a few minutes, to me, those are insignificant. So that's my concern.
Okay, now, Mike. Thank you, Candy. No, that was my fault. No, you are being, everyone's been very, very patient. I appreciate it. Mike?
Karen, this is a question for you. If the board was to deny this, then at some point, then the claimant would have could take the case to court. Would there be a likelihood that the court would make a determination on this and you'd have some finalization on what the criteria should be?
Yes, I would say yes. If the board were to deny the non-service-connected disability application, then the beneficiaries would get the default death benefit that is set out in statute very clearly in Searle. Someone, I assume, would have standing to challenge the board's denial in court.
Scott?
So based on the information included in the packet, the Blink report, the additional information provided from Pierce County that we've taken into consideration today, taking into account all of the facts and circumstances as we know them, I'm going to move we deny the application.
Seconded by Candace. Rusty?
The only thought I had to Karen's comment there was, again, in our defense, it seemed prudent that we have some policy on what constitutes death in this case. A person would not be entitled to the disability. And we don't have a policy right now, do we?
Correct.
So maybe I could just propose that in a near future meeting, we have a meeting or an item on the agenda to discuss this and actually create a policy, finalize this, so going forward we don't face this dilemma again.
Scott, then.
So I absolutely agree with Rusty on that. In terms of the go forward, I think it would be good to articulate a policy, but at least in the matter before us, I look at the very last, at the bottom of page 2 of, so it's not the very last, but it's the bottom of page 2 in Dr. Blank's report, and he says, as to whether such a duration of disability, assuming it is, satisfies the definition referenced above, that is not a medical question, but a legal one. And we're called upon to make legal decisions every day, every time we come to these meetings on a wide variety of issues, including disability themselves. So I'm confident that we have enough information based on these facts, as we know them and have been presented, to make a determination of a legal nature as to whether or not this does or doesn't constitute a disability. So I would encourage, and I vote on the motion.
David, then Candace.
So the motion is to deny. Okay, so I would be in favor to approve, so going against the motion. I think we need to be consistent with our decisions over time, unless there's a real clear distinction. This is similar to the cases we've dealt with before, and every other time we've approved them. So why is this any different? And if we're going to make a distinction, then, or if we're going to make a change in how we handle it, then I think we should actually decide ahead of time what our policy is and what our mindset is, and then apply that going forward. I think it would be a disservice to deny this. Karen, if you could highlight the spirit of the statute, just for some more historical context, why this came about and so forth, and why are we handling this different than other disability applications?
Well, the statutes do very clearly define a death benefit. However, there is no particular statute that guides us in this situation where an active member who's eligible for a disability retirement hasn't applied yet, has signed off on this pre-election form that tells us, in the event that I die, I would like you to submit a disability application on my behalf, and I nominate this person or persons to receive my optional settlement 2 or 4 allowance. There is no statute that says that. This benefit that the board has granted for many years now is not really set in statute. It is a policy, if you will, or a practice that allows just what I said, this disability application process and an optional settlement benefit. We have looked at this from a fiduciary legal standpoint years ago, and found that it's not inconsistent with the law, but there is no statute that defines this process this way. And so we, essentially it's a determination for the board to make on a non-service-connected disability, whether the member was eligible or not. That goes to whether there's competent medical evidence supporting that, want to make one other comment procedurally, that because this is a disability application, if the board were to deny the disability application, and Rusty asked about then going to court, there is something in between, and that is that the beneficiaries would be entitled to due process and to allow them to come in and possibly present additional evidence to support the disability. If you think of your typical disability process, it does allow the applicant to go through an administrative hearing in which they do receive that due process right of presenting evidence. And then the result of that is a recommendation, finding of fact by the administrative law judge, and a recommendation to the board. And then the board makes a decision based on that. So so I would urge you to consider that and not essentially simply deny and have the beneficiaries exhaust their administrative remedies, because I think they would be entitled to that hearing.
So, Will just stepped in. I know how he feels about this issue, and I don't know if he should be received the benefit of hearing the information and the argument.
Yeah, we don't want to repeat the whole, as much as we appreciate Will, I don't want to repeat the whole discussion.
Are you good with your question, though?
I am, thank you.
Candace.
And so, I think I support the concept of bringing it back for a discussion as to should we be setting a policy. I'd also, I know we sort of talked about it, we had Karen researching case law. It would be helpful to find out if other retirement boards have a similar process and or what they do, or do they just, do they have a provision that allows, of course, for this near-death application? I'm just curious how other similar retirement organizations apply this disability provision. And to me, there needs to be, if we come up with a policy, I really would like to see us have one where it's clear that someone is alive for some measurable period of time. Again, I really want this disability application similar to how we apply anyone applying for a disability, where it's measurable, it's clear that they're disabled, and it's not just because they're dead, they're unable to work.
Louis, then Jay, then
Scott. I just want to add.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No. I'll say to David, as you may recall, even though we granted it last time, it was a split decision, and it barely passed. So there are several of us on the board who were very troubled last time with the same one. And the previous one, we weren't aware of the circumstances. So I think it's an issue that continues. We didn't think it was going to come back. We had a presentation on how often we look at these, and we saw that. But certainly it's one that troubles many of us on this board.
Well, I acknowledge that it's been controversial, and that it wasn't a unanimous decision before.
Yeah.
So, but still, that's how we voted.
You know, and again, I'd love to come up with a better standard so that anytime a situation like this where someone dies instantly in layman's term, within a matter of seconds, they're no longer alive, they're not able to be resuscitated, it does raise an interesting, disconcerting issue, which goes to John's very good comments that he raised last time as well. Is this a death benefit or is it a retirement benefit?
Okay, so we have several people who want to speak, Louie, then Jay, then Scott, but before then, just so Will has some context, there is a motion that's been seconded to deny the disability retirement. With that, Louie.
I'm just speaking against the motion. I agree with David. Do we get a policy? I mean, this person died. I mean, what's the ultimate disability? I mean, it says here that he was alive. His brain was functioning for a couple of minutes after that by Blink's conclusion. And in his conclusion, he states as to whether he was totally disabled from any substantial gainful employment as defined by government code prior to his death. The analysis given above shows there must have been a period of noticeable incapacitation. So I'll speak against the motion also.
Thank you, Luke. Jay?
Yeah, just a note on whether it was common. I think I remember at the last discussion we had asked Harvey if this was legal or common among systems, and he didn't provide a lot of context, but he said it was both legal and not uncommon. I think it would be beneficial, though, to have a little more context on how prevalent this benefit actually is, because it does completely supersede the idea of a death benefit. Right? We're never going to have the other instance occur. So,
Scott.
I guess the last thing I'll say is that, and it was emphasized again today, this is not a statutory right. This is a practice that we, SACERA, created some years back, I don't know how many years ago, And this board is the arbiter. This board is the determiner of what the decision should be about our own policy and practice that we've created. So we're not interpreting a statute or trying to torture the English language. We're just interpreting our own practice and policy, and I'm comfortable doing that. I do think going forward, I don't have any problem, as I said earlier, with developing a firmer statement or policy or guidelines on this. But, you know, the question before us is, based on these facts and circumstances, was this person disabled? And I submit they were not. And we're entitled to construe and decide matters that arise under our own policy creation. So I'm comfortable with that.
David, did you have? Okay, I think it was David, then Will.
Well, actually, let me ask a question, Tim. Did you say the family said on the trail that he appeared clammy, and you said that the son provided some more information?
Yeah, what they, and now the son was not there, so he's getting it from his friends that were there or other individuals in the area, and it was just on the hike back, his friends noticed that he had low energy. Not wanting to hold up the group, he encouraged them to go ahead. And at one point, they turned around, and they didn't see him, and that's when they about backtracked and found him.
Okay, so, you know, with my medical experience, I would say that was consistent with him suffering or experiencing some ischemic issues of his heart. And so that was for however many minutes, but then the question is, again, how do you define that period of time? So at least however long that was, even if that doesn't make a difference if it was 10 minutes, 15, 30 minutes, whatever, and then they went back and found that he was down and not responsive. But if I were on the trail with him and he started all of a sudden getting low on energy and appearing like, yeah, just go on, I'll be fine, I would be worried. So, just with my own interpretation, I would say that adds credence to the situation. So,
Good morning.
Good morning.
So, fortuity, I walked in at the right time, I guess, actually, so I apologize for being late. So I agree with other members of the board that, you know, we did create this. This isn't a statutory requirement, but we have a precedent here of this board creating this, publishing a document, publishing a form, allowing our counselors to pass it out to our members, educating them regarding it. It was on our website previously the last time that this came up. And it's on, I assume it's on our website right now. It's essentially a, call it a, you know, in terms of the verbiage, call it a death benefit, whatever you want to call it. It's something that we provide to our members to sign. They have the understanding when they're signing this form that if they do become disabled and they're not able to make a decision, that they are, the board will essentially, you know, grant them this benefit. I appreciate that the board members have a question on this, and I'm, for lack of a better word, benefit or option that we're granting our members, you know, but let's not make an example with somebody that's already passed who, prior to them passing, had the understanding that we were going to grant this. We've done this as a precedent for many of our members. So, you know, our council has said that it's legal, it's allowed. One of the questions that I have is, again, this is coming down to a timing issue of, you know, how long is the person disabled? Is it, you know, we've had this discussion in past similar type of examples. So if somebody, let's say, suffers this as a heart attack, and let's say they're disabled and they're essentially in a vegetative state and they're on life support and there's something that's, you know, operating for them, we would consider them disabled. But what's the difference between that being on life support and then being disabled versus them being disabled for the matter of minutes or the matter of, you know, an hour or, you know, whatever else, if, as long as somebody can keep somebody alive. So I don't think we should get into the nitty-gritty of how long some, you know, in terms of, it's, you know, how long is somebody disabled or are they, you know. What I think should happen, and I oppose this, of denying it, is we shouldn't be making this decision on this one member who's already passed, who had the understanding that we had this and we have a precedent of this. If the board has the will to do this, I think we should undo this in terms of the form and make it a, you know, make it you have a discussion regarding undoing that in the future. But I don't think we should be taking this one case as an example and then changing our mind, essentially from a precedent when the member had the understanding of this option. So again, I oppose the motion, but I support, you know, all the members of the board. That's why we have a board, in the interest of the fiduciaries of this board, in terms of their will for potentially taking away this death option or this death benefit. But do not make it on this one member. We shouldn't be doing that. We shouldn't use this case as a time to change. We need to announce this, you know, to the people that are alive and say, hey, we're going to be changing this, not to the people that just passed. So,
thank you, Will. John?
Oh.
Gail, did you?
Will missed some of our earlier discussion on timing, but what you described is exactly how I remember the preceding case and how it ended. And I voted, I believe, for granting the disability benefit for exactly the reasons you were describing. But I did that anyway on the basis that we would clarify going forward how we dealt with this kind of a case. We are in exactly the same position today as we were then. I'm not prepared to continue with an example. Supporting something because it's a precedent when I voted last time on the basis that we were not forming a precedent. We were agreeing that that was the process that we had followed before, but we were going to clarify what it is we would do in this kind of a case going forward. I don't believe this is a disability benefit. So my intention is to support the motion.
Candace? Oh, I'm sorry. Gail, then Candace.
What I was going to mention was that we will be agendizing this to discuss a possible policy in the future, and we'll also reach out to other plans to see if they offer, if they do a similar practice as this. So that will be good.
Candace, then Scott.
And it would be my understanding that what we're telling people when they sign the form is this is if you're disabled while you're working and you're not able to, you know, sign this form because of your illness, you will still receive this benefit. We're not telling them if you die instantly, this is an additional death benefit for your heirs. And I think that's the distinction, and that's where I think it's not what we're doing today isn't taking, ripping away a benefit from people. We've told them, you know, if you're disabled and then you die and you don't have the opportunity to sign it, we aren't saying this is an additional death benefit, all of you are going to get it because everyone who dies is disabled. That's not the intent of it, and that's not how it was represented to members. So I don't feel that our decision today, if we choose not to grant it, is in any way taking away a benefit that's been promised to our members.
Scott.
Fully agree with what Candace just said, and I wanted to ask Gail that with respect to this coming back, I think we should bring it back in a way that, at least initially, is, for lack of a better term, a non-decision workshop to look at all facets, including whether this is a good policy at all, so that everything's on the table that we can talk about before we would make a decision about it. I think it's worth vetting and looking at all sides of it, including whether or not it's a worthwhile policy to continue with, and then tee it up for a vote. That's my suggestion.
And we actually, we we briefly discussed recently about maybe including some FAQs with the form so that members have a better understanding of what the form is, because in some cases, it's not always a better benefit to have that form on file for the member. And so I think, you know, as part of that discussion, we'll also include some information for the board's consideration around that.
Yeah, I would want us to talk about it before we publish anything further on the website or in any distribution of members, simply because if we're going to publish FAQs before we actually talk about it, that's going to skew one way or the other. So I appreciate that. Just let's bring it all back at one time.
Well, then, Karen.
Since there was a question by Trustee Anderson in terms of what does it say, I mean, I was trying to pull it up in the last minute. I had it prepared for the last time we had this discussion in terms of what it does say on the website. What does the form say? Could staff cover for us what it does say? So, or could a maybe Tim, you could represent in terms of what the counselors are saying or what's actually being said to the members, so that we're not basing this purely just off of precedent to Scott's point, but we're basing it off what are we actually portraying to our members.
Sharon, go first.
Yes, and thank you. That was going to be my comment addressing Candace's question about what the form says, and it does clearly specify that the benefit is contingent upon the board's finding that the member was eligible for a non-service-connected disability. So it's certainly within the board's authority to deny the disability application if they find that there is not competent medical evidence supporting a non-service-connected disability.
As well as on the top of the form, the first bullet, which is under the purpose of the form, this form authorizes SACERA to file an application for non-service-connected disability on your behalf in the event that you are permanently incapacitated by reason of injury or other disability leading to death while you are an active member of SACERA.
Okay, so Karen, first off, you said when there's medical evidence and we have a doctor here specifying their opinion, Dr. Blank, that the person was in fact disabled. Trustee McDonald, who's a physician as well, agrees concurrently, I believe, Dr. McDonald, with that. Tim, you just mentioned disabled leading to death, right? Is there anything in terms of the timing of how long you have to be disabled in that?
There's nothing specific on the form.
Okay. So, and I don't know if we have any counselors in the room. Is it when you're covering, I don't know, if in terms of staff or Tim? I got you.
I
got you. Good one. I just got that. That was awesome. But I don't know if we have any retirement counselors.
We do have some.
Or yourself, Tim. I mean, when this form is covered, I mean, doesn't the member essentially have the understanding that if they are permanently incapacitated or disabled, that SACERA would file that form on their behalf?
Well, currently, the form is part of the new hire packet that the employers have, and SACERA, they're taking it from SACERA's website or the packet of forms for completion when someone joins the county.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. So, my understanding, if I filled out this form, if I suffered a heart attack and I was on life support or I was on life support while I was being driven in the ambulance to the hospital to be pronounced at the emergency room, that it would be granted. You know, the board would see me as being permanently disabled, leading to death, as the form indicates, and that with the precedent that we've had in this board, granting it. I don't see anything in terms of timing, and I don't want to get into medical timing of how long somebody needs to be disabled. That's never been qualified in terms of anything that we're portraying to the members. So I urge the trustees of this board today to not make the decision, not make this person the example. If we want to attack this option or this death benefit or whatever you want to call it, let's do that separately, but let's not do it for somebody that's just passed and we're making that an example of them. So I urge you to oppose this.
Karen, did you have any additional or were you able to? Okay, David, then Scott.
I agree with Will, and from just my own experience with coworkers in the hospital. There was an experience where one of the nurses lost her husband and had not filled out that form. And then after her experience, then there was a flood of people who signed up, completed those forms with the understanding that you need to have this in place to protect your benefit going forward. So there was the common understanding within the sphere of where I work. I'm not speaking for all employees at Contra Costa, but my experience has been that people do sign up for this with that understanding of disability debt. So, Scott.
Yes, thank you. Just for purposes of the administrative record of this proceeding, I wanted to respond to something Will said because I think he arrived after we initially discussed it, and that is with respect to Dr. Blink's opinion, which is in the packet, it is based on absolutely no facts of the event itself. He says that, stating there's no record of the event. So I stated earlier and still view it to be the case that his opinion is entirely speculative in the sense that, at least for me, it carries little to no weight because it's not based on any facts or circumstances that he was able to glean from a review of records surrounding the event itself. So I gave the opinion little to no weight for that reason.
Well,
yeah, understood. I think it's also based off experience. I think there was a cause of death, which is cardiac ischemia, I think was what the I think I read.
Okay.
So I think based off his experience, my experience, and probably Dr. McDonald's experience, is that you are permanently incapacitated if you do have, you know, permanent effects of cardiac ischemia or cardiac tissue death. So maybe that's why he's, you know, not basing it off of, like you said, factual evidence, but more of implied assumption, if you will, of medical experience. I'm not sure. That's what I'm basing it off. That when you do suffer cardiac tissue death, it's permanent. So.
Okay. I don't see any other hands raised, so I'll take this opportunity to give my thoughts. I'm against the motion. All the reasons stated by Trustee McDonald and Trustee Pigeon, and for past practice of this board. I realize that we're individual trustees and we're not beholden to decisions and opinions that past boards held, but I can tell you in the 11 years I've been around this organization, both in the audience and at this desk, until the last one, I don't recall any discussion on when these came about. This exact scenario is exactly what I would expect should I be in that situation, that my family would be taken care of, because that's how I understood it. That's how I've always understood it with my interactions with counselors in my professional capacity. And it's how my employer essentially explains it to employees. So, respectfully, Candace, you know, when you say, you know, staff shouldn't be doing this, I think that's a question that we collectively need to address, and I fully am in favor of us revisiting this issue and getting things more concrete, because it does feel like we're changing the rules on people. This board is recently, as September 13th, 2017, had a case essentially identical to this. We had a member who died unattended of a heart attack, and that was granted on a 9-0 vote, with the ayes being Anderson, Gordon, Holcomb, McDonald, Phillips, Pigeon, Smithy, Tullis, and Zhu. I think if we change it now, that it's entirely unfair to this individual. Granted, it's not statutory, but we fund it. This member has been paying with this assumption in the valuation, his money has been going to fund this. Me and Will, and I assume you're in Gail, you're paying for it. We're all paying for it. This is my assumption of what it is. If we want to change the rules, fine, but let's do it in an open and transparent way. Let's not just draw a line in the sand on some arbitrary gentleman who passed. And for that reason, not only do I not support the motion, and I don't like doing this, but I want an affirmative vote on for this member. So I'm making a substitute motion that we accept the recommendations as stated in agenda item 7. Seconded by Will. Any further discussion on this item? Seeing none, I'm going to call for a vote of the substitute motion. Again, the motion is to accept the recommendations in item 7. With that, I'll start the vote and remind Trustee Finley that Will is present and able to vote. Please vote on the substitute motion. My substitute motion is to accept the recommendations that we find the member permanently unable to engage in any substantial gainful employment and grant a non-service-connected disability effective 7/13/18 and grant the member's beneficiaries benefits pursuant to Government Code 31764 and optional settlement for allowance. I see 7 votes. There's the 9th vote. We'll stop the vote. The substitute motion passed on a 5-4 vote. The ayes were Kroll, McDonald, Pigeon, Smithy, and Watts. The noes were Anderson, Gordon, Kwan, Phillips. And with that, this motion is closed. And I would just like to say I appreciate all trustees' opinions on this, and I think it was handled in a respectful manner. And I appreciate that. Yes. Yes.
I apologize. Going forward, can we have some clear planning on what are the questions we're going to ask? What are the guidelines we're going to set? What's the format and so forth? Because all of the questions and issues that were raised here need to be worked out. And so, unfortunately, with the last case that we dealt with, that didn't get on the agenda before this case came up. And I respect all the concerns that were raised about technicalities and what is the real meaning of this and what is the spirit of what we've been doing over the years and so forth. And so I want to make sure that all of these questions are answered going forward. So
it'll be brought back before there's another one of these that is brought to the board. I can definitely.
Thank you.
I'd say in the next month or two, the board will have a discussion where they can, we'll provide some information and the board can discuss it a little bit.
With that, we'll move on to